every time you post on social media, to me, the way I visualize it, it's like a fishing line. And the more you cast out this fishing line, now you're starting to create a brand. The more people start attracted to that brand.
Some of you guys could take the local route. Some of you guys could take the normal highway route. Or some of you that take the tollway, you can take the tollway route. Question for you, which route would get you to where you want to go faster? Tollway, right? Why the tollway? Because you got to pay for it. In other words, if you want the exact edge of going where you want to go and you're willing to pay the price, you can get to where you want to go faster. People often think that millionaires make their money because they have multiple streams of income. Well, I want to dispel that controversy because they don't. They pick one thing, they focus on one thing, put all their effort, their focus, their attention into one thing to make the first million. Then after that, they diversify, create multiple streams of income. So on your journey, come up, focus on one thing, find that one thing that most likely will help you become cash flow millionaire.
Hey, that was Atlanta, Georgia. So shout out to Jasmine and Ella Suazo in Atlanta. Not only was I out there for the Gotcha Book Tour, but we also doubled back as a grand opening for their Atlanta office in a suburb called Dunwoody. Guess who lives in the, well, I won't share, but there's a lot of, let's just say a lot of celebrities that you and I know are living in Atlanta. So big shout out to Jasmine Ella Suazo that had close to 500 people there, man.
500.
Close to 500 people in that office, man. So that's the first.
Yeah,
that's the first office I had. So I just can't imagine what that's going to look like here. Actually, I could. What's going to look like here in the next year, two, three, four, 5 years. But let's just say that Atlanta is alive well, man. You know, Ellison and Jasmine.
Yeah, he was one of my first clients when I first started coming around you guys.
Absolutely, man. They reminded me of the boot camp we did. Remember that boot camp we did for 12 weeks? Biggest Loser?
Yeah.
Matt, you had us running up hills, and Milton is yelling us like a drill sergeant, all that good stuff. But but nonetheless, it was a memory stuck in her brain. So, all right, everybody, how you doing? It's Wednesday, and that means that the Seven Figure Squad podcast coming to you live here in Dallas, Texas, from Dallas, Texas. Even though we're both from Chicago, but we now relocated to Dallas, Texas. But we have interesting topics for us to talk today. Trump ordered to pay his fine on the $454 million fine from his civil lawsuit. Claims his attorneys claim he doesn't have the money. He does. But his attorneys claim he doesn't have the money. He's got four options into what he needs to get done going forward. This is a lesson in personal finance. Why? Cash is king. Matter of fact, cash flow is king. Cash is queen. Credit, just by having credit, is for jokers.
This is the first time I hear that.
Yeah. Cash flow is king. Because what happens if you have all this credit and you got no cash flow? You got no cash.
Yeah.
You have all this debt you owe and you got no flow to service the debt or pay off the debt. Mortgage rates are at a stall, even though the Federal Reserve decided to halt any rate drop until later on in the year. We're going to be discussing this, what the National Association of Realtors lawsuit settlement means to the real estate community. There's four times to buy a house in a high interest rate environment. So in spite of what you're hearing right now, this is an environment where many people can find opportunity in home ownership. You should do it. Should you not do it? We'll discuss that. Wife got pregnant by another dude. I don't think they're a wife, but let's say they're in a relationship.
Yeah, girlfriend.
And girlfriend, and they got she got pregnant, cheating on him, and now she claims that she has to raise their child together.
She cheated, and the guy just kind of left her.
That's right. So I want to see your reaction, and I want everybody's reaction to this too. Is what would you do in a situation? And you got a couple topics here on obesity, and I'll wrap it up with "If I Were the Devil" by Paul Harvey, OG name there from 1965. Our reaction to that, especially this week being Holy Week, leading up to Easter this Sunday. You got a topic on obesity?
Yeah,
a couple topics.
Yeah, I just have two topics.
Yep.
And it's, what are you willing to sacrifice to be great? You know, it takes another level of dedication, Matt, in life to reach higher levels, and that's something that I've seen being around you guys and being around the kind of caliber of people that you guys are. Seeing that you guys are willing to put in the work, willing to sacrifice what you need to sacrifice in order to be able to reach that next destination that you guys are trying to get to. So what does LeBron say that he had to do in order for him to get to where he's at today, from sacrificing friends, family, parties, and enjoying his youth? Because he went straight to the league after high school, correct?
Yeah.
So right after high school, a lot of people were going to college, trying to find a good college to have a good time, partying, just not really giving a crap. So let's see what LeBron says on that. And when it comes down to obesity, have you ever heard of the Arnold?
The Arnold Classic?
Yeah, Arnold Classic.
Isn't that in In Ohio?
Yeah, Ohio.
During Arnold, the, because we used to go for MMA competitions.
Yeah, so the Arnold Classic, which is in Ohio, and then Mr. Olympia, which is in Vegas every September, mm-hmm. October, November, around those times. But now there's a such thing called the FatCon, where a bunch of people from around the nation gather together at a FatCon, kind of like an Arnold or the Olympia, and they glorify and they honor themselves and they being love obese. Each other from being obese.
An affirming conference on obesity.
Yes. So with that being said, we understanding that obesity is at an all-time high, and now that it's being exalted and glorified, and anyone who points a finger at you saying, hey, you're overweight, you're unhealthy, you need help, they consider that shaming and they try to cancel you.
Okay.
So we're going to touch on life expectancy and how to be able to approach this situation, whether it's you or you know someone who's in this position.
Okay, cool. Gotcha. What else?
Those are my two main ones.
I love it. All right, let's jump into it. So Trump, former President Donald Trump, obviously running for president again, representing the Republican National Committee and the RNC, has been ordered to pay a hefty fine, groundbreaking fine. A lot of people think this is very anti-American. A lot of people feel that this is anti-entrepreneur. A lot of people think this is anti-personal finance, where the government can just come in, create this lawfare, not warfare, lawfare, and get their political enemies to file lawsuits to shut down one's empire. And so a lot of people, if you're just looking at it from the surface level and you don't go deep, it's very easy to point shots and point fingers and say, yeah, he did this right, or yeah, he did this wrong. If you don't go deep, you don't understand the depth behind these things. It's very easy to be judgmental in terms of what's going on. But I think Kevin O'Leary, very very adamant about what's going on right now, that a lot of people right now are looking to leave New York. I think New York is not one, if not number two, city and state to lose people to other states. And they're coming to Florida. They're coming to Texas. They're coming to Tennessee. Number two on that list would be California. Number three would be Chicago. I don't know exactly the order, but those are the top three. But Attorney General Letitia James said she'll ask the court to seize his assets if he does not pay. If you can, Jordan, if you can take a look at my screen here real quick, I took this clip from the NBC News YouTube channel. But here's his options. Right, Trump's got some options. By the way, I talked to this situation to other business people, other entrepreneurs, other real estate investors, other business owners, $1 million level, deca-million-dollar level, $1 billion level. I talked to attorneys. I talked to people that can just look at it from an unbiased political standpoint. Just look at the letter of the law, looking at our Constitution, look at our Declaration of Independence, look at the way America is set up and how they felt about it. And here's the thing with this whole fraudulent asset inflation case that went down in a civil case. It's not a criminal case. It's a civil case. A lot of people feel, man, this is an attack on the entrepreneur. This is an attack on the real estate investor. This is an attack on somebody that's going out there making a name for themselves and going from rags to riches, where the government can come in and seize everything that you built just because they don't agree with you. Now, I've been in that type of situation, much, much less different. My situation with this, I felt this way when I went to family law, where I walked into a family court case, and right away, even though I had custody of the kids, right away I'm blacklisted as a deadbeat dad. Had to spend additional money on attorneys for myself and my children because the law looked at fathers differently in court. And back to the Trump case here. I don't know if you dove deep into this conversation or this topic or the situation. But what has been your hand on the pulse of this situation from the outside looking in?
So that's a thought that came to mind when you brought up that this is an attack directly on an entrepreneur, on the real estate agents, people who are trying to build their own business.
Yep.
So for someone who's kind of on the fence of things, who's comfortable, you know, working their 9-to-5s, working their corporate jobs, and they're doing okay. And since they're making okay money and they're not trying to, I guess, surpass a certain threshold of financial freedom, like, hey man, like it's really not that bad. Why do entrepreneurs constantly have to feel like the victims? Why do real estate agents or people who are trying to build their own business consistently nag about being the victims of what the government's trying to do, when in reality the government's doing what they can to help everybody at once? because it's been a consistent flow whenever I do have conversations with my friends. I'm like, man, this you know, the economy's going crazy. The reason I moved down to Dallas, Texas, because of the taxes, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to grow, and XYZ. And a lot of my friends are like, bro, you can make good money. You don't have to have the luxurious experiences that you have to have. You don't need to grow your business to XYZ level. All you're trying to do is raise a family, have kids, right?
Yep.
And then do what you can.
Yep.
Why are you guys consistently attacking the government for trying to help the entire nation and people who are in need? Because those people also need help. So going based off what you just said now on, you know, it feels like it's an attack on real estate agents, people trying to make their money, and their entrepreneurs. Why do you feel that that's like the main, the feeling that yeah. comes amongst a lot of people?
Because here's a scary part. Okay, he loses a civil case, not a criminal case.
Okay.
The reason why it's not a criminal case is because who's the victim?
Yeah.
Nobody's a victim here. Nobody's saying Trump ripped me off.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying, oh, he got me on that deal. Nobody's saying, oh, he took advantage of us here, and because of inflating his assets, he made an extra da-da-da-da-da, and he unjustly enriched himself. I think that's the legal term behind it, right?
Yeah.
And we are the ones that paid. Because oftentimes people think in entrepreneurship or in sales, there's a win-lose situation, like in the streets, right? There's a win-lose.
Yeah.
The drug dealers win, but their customers lose.
Yeah.
Right? People think that that's the way business should be done. The best situation in business should be win-win-win situation. The client wins, number one. That's the first person that should win, is the client, the customer.
Yeah.
They win. Now, do Trump's customers win? If I'm an investor in Trump buildings and condo hotels and anything that he slaps the Trump name on, do I want to get in on that deal?
100%.
Okay, because he makes you money.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Are they the ones... Are the clients the ones filing the civil lawsuit? No,
yeah,
they're not. The banks, are the banks claiming foul, even though he's filed multiple times corporate bankruptcy with the banks in his previous history? Are they the ones crying foul?
No,
because they lent the money based on the appraised value and they bought it,
yeah,
and they got it. And so, who's the loser? Because the client should win, number one.
Yeah.
The vendor or the carrier, the product, moving their product or service should win.
Yeah.
And number three, the entrepreneur that puts those three pieces together should win too as well. Now, for example, your clients win, you win, the gym you do business wins, any supplement company that you refer people to,
yeah,
any doctor, medical professional, healthcare professional you refer people to, they win.
The network wins.
Who loses in your business? That's a good business.
Yeah.
Our business, people get life insurance, people get retirement planning. People, the carriers move the product because they don't have their own intel and salespeople. They don't lose, they win. They don't pay us for advertising until we sell something, right?
So if you're a client customer of Trump right now, and you say you're an investor in multiple of his endeavors, yeah, or just one of his endeavors, how is this specific issue affecting you as a customer client?
So here's a lesson in personal finance, okay? Now, Trump is ordered to pay cash. He's got the cash.
Yeah.
Okay? But the lesson you should learn here too, as well, is just because you have a lot of assets, people think that oftentimes billionaires have all this cash. No, they have a lot of assets.
Yeah.
A lot of their wealth is on paper. And what they do is they borrow money from the banks to get the cash.
Yeah.
A couple reasons why: they don't liquidate the position. Number two, they don't pay. And if they do liquidate their position, they don't pay any capital gains tax on liquidating their position and the property. They don't lose control of that asset. That's why millionaires and billionaires, if they need cash, they go to a bank and loan against it. And the bank uses the asset, the business, the building, as collateral. So, for example, if Elon Musk wants to take $1 billion of cash from his stock and wants to invest in something else outside of him outwardly selling his stock and position in the company, he'd go to a bank, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, you know, the market makers.
Yeah.
So, listen, put this as collateral. Let me set this aside as collateral, because if I don't pay back your $1 billion loan that you're about to give me, you can take my stock in the company.
Yeah.
Right? And based on the value of the stock of the company, stability of the company, they're like, yep, that's a good deal for us.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you pay us X amount of interest. Oh, by the way, business interest is tax deductible. And you receive this $1 billion of money, there's no income tax because it's a loan. Similar way people draw money from life insurance policies as a loan, there's no tax on it. Why? Because it's a loan. So Trump's got the cash. He just doesn't want to put it. So, and his other case, he's, I think the sexual harassment case.
Yeah.
I think they lowered that a little bit, but this is a lesson in personal finance. Cash flow is king, and when you have cash flow, you minimize the expenses. Don't spend it into luxurious things. Set it aside for cash. So therefore you capitalize yourself because you have a lot of liquid cash and capital. You feel confident. You feel strong. You can have a strong backbone. You can look upright. You can look at people in the eye when you have cash. Third aspect of it is then credit for the right purposes, for leverage purposes. If you don't have any purposes for credit, then it's for jokers. If it's just using credit for maintaining a lifestyle to buy things that depreciate in value, just to impress people that don't care about you anyway, that's a loser type move. But if you're losing credit for leverage, it means you're earning arbitrage, meaning you're borrowing at one rate but earning another. So for example, brother, you go down to the bank, they leverage us all day long. They give you, what do you get in a savings account? What type of interest rate?
Oh, man. That's one of those things where I just go once a year and get it checked out, man. And that's probably my mistake. That's probably something I should be doing.
So for example, you'll get about maybe 2-3% if you put into a five-year CD.
The high yield CD,
12 month, you got to lock it up.
Yeah.
They'll give you 5%.
Yeah.
So what do you think they do on the flip side? They pay you 5% to borrow your $100,000. Well, guess what they do through fractional lending? They lend $100,000 to other people like myself, who's also a banking customer.
Yeah.
Or potential banking customer. They loan that same $100,000 for a business line of credit at 9, 10, 11, 12%. In the form of credit cards at 20%.
Yeah.
Right? In form of student loans at 6%. You see my point?
Yeah.
So they're paying you 5%, but they're collecting 8, 9, 20% mortgage, 6%, 7%.
Yeah, don't.
So that spread is their profit.
Yeah, because they're still making profit off of the collection. And I see what you're saying.
So as we wrap up this topic, you know, Trump's got four options here. Either A, use his own cash, which he has, but doesn't want to pay. According to his attorneys, he doesn't have. But, you know, a lot of people know he has it.
Yeah.
Number two, he can receive a large cash gift from cash from others. Large gift of cash from others. Number three, he can start selling his property. Now, keep in mind that when he lost this civil lawsuit, he can no longer be a president. He and his sons and daughter can no longer be president of any business, director position or executive position in all of New York. So they can't be running the... In other words, they can't run the company.
Yeah.
And they assigned a special master to the Trump Corporation from the government, from New York, to monitor everything that goes down financially with Trump Organization.
That's stressful as fuck, man.
Shh. Yeah. And the thing here, too, is he can file bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Right? And they've and by the way, that's the scary part. Let's say he files bankruptcy and they take over the property, or the government takes over the property. By the way, that's what they want to do all the way. That's what they want to do to begin with. They want to take him down. They try to take him down. By the way, I'm not trying to say this as a Trump apologist. I'm saying this as an entrepreneur, not a politician, nor somebody that is trying to get your vote for one way or the other. I'm just saying this as a from a personal lens, entrepreneurial lens, faith-based lens of the injustice that's going on here. Because if it could happen to him, can happen to you. And you know, Kevin Leary even said that many people today in a world are losing their faith in the United States and the environment of where to invest in the United States.
I was going to ask, from these four options that you gave, that uses cash, receive large gift, sell property, file bankruptcy, if you were in this position right now at this very moment, out of those four options, what would you do and why?
If that was me?
If you were in this position right now.
I'd collateralize my property and get a loan for the settlement and pay off the government, get them on my face.
So you wouldn't go with option two, which is receive a large gift or cash from other people?
Sure, that would. But then I'm beholden to other people.
Yeah. But isn't there like a bunch, even if it's a gift, isn't there a bunch of loopholes, especially if it's a huge lump sum of money that you have to go through?
Yeah. I don't feel like I'm obligated to anybody, bro.
Yeah.
If people send it to me as a gift, and then I have to, it's $1,000, $10,000, $100,000. Do I own you anything? Are you going to look at me differently because I took your cash? I just don't like to have to go through that question.
Yeah.
So if I take your money, now am I bought? Now do I have to lean a certain way? Now are you going to influence people? Or do I maintain, or can I just look at myself in a mirror knowing that I still got integrity?
Yeah.
That sometimes it's hard for me and people like you and I to accept praise, gifts. Like you and I are hard to... We don't like receiving gifts from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like I've learned to become accustomed to receiving gifts.
Yeah.
I don't know about cash.
Yeah.
But people just give me cash. Matt, I know you're going through a hard time right now. Here's $100 million. Dude, what owe you?
What do you have to do something for them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about taking large cash from other people. So, speaking of cash, let's transition to the next topic. the mortgages for some people, it's one thing to buy a house brand new. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's what they're talking about, the new inventory coming to marketplace. Wait, we need new inventory. And all these new home builders are building these homes, and they want you to buy it. But a lot of people don't catch on the back end a big surprise. So it's one thing to have principal and interest that you're paying on the mortgage, but they figure the other part of a mortgage payment, which is taxes and insurance. Yeah. Let's take a look at this clip.
So my mortgage went from $2,500 a month for my five-bedroom house to $7,500 in 7 years. It went up to $7,500.
Okay, let's just stop right there. I didn't realize there's music behind it. Usually when we have music behind it, we're copywritten. Okay, so why I don't know if you can just show the screen, Milton, without playing the music behind it. Okay, perfect. Okay, so her mortgage went from... thank you, Jordan. So they're having a very good conversation. And this woman is very wise. Okay, this woman is very wise. Okay, she's helping people understand real estate and real estate investing. So the point here is she's saying what people don't understand is that when the home is finally brand new and it gets built, it's one thing to appraise it when it was just land, but it's another thing to appraise it when there's improvements. Anytime you improve upon land, that property identification number, that PIN number, is then assessed a new number by the tax assessor's office by your city and or state or your county, okay? And so that will then increase your property taxes. Condos not so much, but let's say, for example, Milton, you bought a house here in Texas for $400,000 or $500,000, and you decide to put a pool and a patio.
Yeah.
That increases the value, right?
1%, yep.
Guess what it is? Also increases.
Tax.
Exactly, yeah. Your real estate tax.
Yeah.
So, this young lady bought a house, and that's why her payment went from $2,500 to $7,500, and that's something that either your real estate professional or your mortgage professional needs to educate you on in terms of home ownership in buying new property. Now, even if you buy an existing property, and you improve upon, for example, in our backyard, you see our big backyard, right? I'm thinking about putting a shed back there, you know, my own little home office space, a cigar lounge when it's cold. I can go in there. And I'm thinking about buying one of those $35,000 Home Depot homes.
Yeah, just put it in your backyard and just hang out there.
What's the downside to that, though?
Yeah.
Downside to it is, even if I get HOA approval, it's in the back, so people should be able to see it. But even if I get approval, what will happen to my taxes?
Increase.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, it increases the value of the house.
Yes.
By doing something like that, any type of improvement will increase the value of the house.
Yeah.
You know, the internals of your house, if it improves, then you are subject to a reassessment of your property value, which then increases your taxes on that property.
Are there people who, when they try to beautify their home or do any kind of upgrades, that try to get away? Because the thing, like, I never knew that. In prior years where I would see a lot of, you know, my people going to houses, you know, building stuff, making it look better, but never would they have to go through a reassessment, or would they even consider, like, oh man, this is going to increase my taxes. We're just going to do it because it looks nicer for us.
Yep.
Is there a loophole? Is it mandated? Like, how do people even approach?
Here's the thing. If you file a home improvement, if you want to do a home improvement, guess what you need?
Permit, right?
Correct.
Yeah, correct.
So two people from the government go to your house. The inspector, to make sure that whatever is being improved, you have a permit for. And the second person, once that permit is done, guess who comes, drops by and does a visit?
The tax assessor.
Yeah. They come by and visit the property too as well. So if you want to try to do things under the table, the downside to doing that, you're hiring a contractor that knows you're doing on the table that is not held into the standards and regulations by what their permit is being told. And if something happens, and your insurance company might have a problem with this too as well, because if improvements are done in your house and it wasn't permitted and wasn't done by somebody who was bonded, then you're subject to your own snafu when it comes to electricity burning your house down.
Yeah.
In terms of faulty gas, faulty water, whatever went faulty with the improvement you're trying to do, that's the downside of going through non-permitted, non-bonded contractors to improve the value of your house.
So most people in Chicagoland area are...
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, why do you think they're trying to do it? Because you got this mayor out there, Mayor Johnson, who's getting lit up by everything he's doing in Chicago. People thought he'd be a better mayor than Lightfoot. He's just as worse. There's so many people are... By the way, brother, I'm not trying to get people to flip, you know, votes from one party to another. But there's so many votes leaning towards Trump going into this next election cycle. They never thought about voting for Trump because their life isn't any better. I'm not trying to fill in, try to tell people what to do. You got to go out there and you got to do your own research. You got to figure out what policies are best for you. I know what policy is best for you. The top policy for me in my voting process is economic policy. In other words, if the government doesn't create an environment for me to have economic empowerment, to create my own business, to take care of myself, to have confidence as a man, then I got a problem with this administration, whatever administration is, whether blue or red. If they cause me to be in a position of force versus choice, force versus make your own idea, this is what we have, do what you feel is right for you. That's why a lot of people, like a lot of my military buddies, they despise what's gone with the government the last five years. And, I'm gonna table that idea for your topic later on. But here's four times. Four times you should buy a home, even with a high interest rate environment. Number one, you find your dream house. Sheena and I, we found a dream house here in Frisco, Texas. Goodness gracious, it's my wife's first house that we bought together. Mm. Previous before that, we rented for 7 years. So we found our dream house, we bought it, we got the right loan, we had the cash flow to justify the purchase. Boom, we bought our dream home. Killer house.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Beautiful house, yeah.
Number two, you can afford the higher interest rate. So if you find your dream house and you can afford that payment, knock yourself out. But here's a problem with a lot of people in America today. Even if they have good money, they're earning decent income, the home prices are inflated so high that they can't even afford the price, especially with the interest rates that there are right now. So they're relenting to buy in a different area, which is less desirable, but they can afford the house. But if you can afford the high rate and it's your dream house, go buy the house. Which leads me to the third thing. What's affordable to you? The banks will tell you also what's affordable to you. It's called a debt-to-income ratio. But at the same time, too, as well, you have to figure out if it's really affordable to you. I abide by the 50-30-20 rule, meaning that out of 100% of my income, 50% of it goes to tithes, taxes, savings, and investments. 30-20, whatever that mix is. If you want to put 10% to savings, 10% to tithes, 30% into your investments, knock yourself out. So 50-30. So in other words, save and pay unto Caesar what is Caesar's, pay unto God what is God's, and you live on the other 50%. So if I make $100,000 a year, live on $50,000.
Yeah.
Which for a lot of people say, Matt, I can't live on $50,000. Well, that's not your future savings fault. Guess what you got to do then if you can't live on $50,000? You got to make more. You got to make more money. You got to challenge yourself to make more money before you can make any big decisions that allow you to live the life that you want to live. Think about this, guys. I was in my mid to late 40s before I actually bought a house with my now wife. So everybody's complaining today. I'm 20 years old. I can't buy a house. I'm 30 years old. I can't buy a house. Success has got a process.
Yeah.
You know, people want wealth in their 50s, in their 20s right away. Because social media is jading a lot of people think that they can't. Depends on what type of head start you got. Because here's the thing. The viewers of our podcast, you, let me ask you guys a question. How many guys were the benefactor of inherited wealth? Put it in the comment section. How many guys had inherited wealth? Or were you raised broke? Meaning that when you graduated high school, when you graduated eighth grade, when you graduated college, did somebody give you like a $50,000 inheritance, $100,000 inheritance, a $10,000? Did somebody give you a car? By the way, when I saw guys in some high schools get a car for their graduation, you know what the first thing that went through my mind? Like, right, for example, you and I have the same reaction, right? Like, good for them, right?
Yeah.
But...
Yeah. Right.
Like what? Some people are just raised on second and third base.
Yeah.
Some of us were raised having to go to the batter's box to just get an opportunity to get on first base. That's Milton and I. And as many of you on this podcast, watching this podcast, put in the comment section, inheritance or were you raised broke? Put in the comment section. I'm interested in what people will have to say. And then the last condition in terms of buying a house is when the alternative is renting. Renting may be the only recourse for many. It was our recourse for, again, many, many years. I did, however, on my own as a single father of three kids, I did rent to own. We've talked about this on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So my first house in Western Springs, Illinois, was buying a house on rental, giving him a $10,000, $15,000 down payment instead of a security deposit of $3,000. I gave him a $10,000, $15,000 security deposit to exercise my option to buy. So, and I paid that all up front and I negotiated at 50%. I suggested 100%, but he countered with 50%. 50% of my rent would go toward down payment. So in addition to my deposit, 50% of my rent for next 1 year will go towards the purchase price at an agreed on purchase price as of this that particular year, because what happened to real estate prices in the 2000s?
Yeah.
It increased. So I pocketed the increase because we locked in the purchase price.
How did you find
How did I find that?
How'd you find a homeowner who was willing and open to the idea of
rent-to-buy? I made 50 phone calls of any homeowner in that area selling their home. Not renting a home.
Yeah.
They listed it for sale.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So I called them. I called them directly. I knocked on their door. Hey, listen, beautiful house here. I know you got it for sale, but my credit's still building. I do have cash. So while my credit is building to potentially purchase a house, would you be able to rent this beautiful home to myself? I'll take care of the property because I want to own it. You have a different tenant coming in this house. So therefore, take this cash up front, 100% of my rental is going to go to down payment. Oh, 50%. No problem. 50% of my rental is going towards down payment and equity, and you sell it to me at a grand price today, 12 months from now. That's how I did. And then I took that when I finally sold that house, and I bought the least expensive house and the most expensive block, and I pocketed a difference. So when Sheena and I decided to rent in Naperville, we took part of that down payment.
Naperville.
Remember that house in Naperville?
Yeah.
And we did the same thing too as well, but we didn't exercise the option to buy.
What was a couple characteristics that you looked for in the homeowners to say, yeah, this is the ideal avatar that I'm targeting in order for me to be able to pitch the idea?
Perfect question. I'm wondering if they're looking to exit out of it fast. Do they have another house they have on sale? They're just waiting for this home to sell, so therefore they can get this monkey off the back to move on to the next project, or just stay a one homeowner type of homeowner.
Yeah.
Was there a crisis in the family? Is this an inherited house? The siblings are getting together just to sell the house to split the money between the siblings.
Mm-hmm.
That's number two. Number three, is this house currently under foreclosure, or is this house under some form of distress that's not listed on the MLS? Can I get a little bit more insight into your, if I'm talking to a realtor, can I get a little more insight into your client? What motivates them to sell the house?
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to try to hold their cards close to their chest.
Yeah.
But if I'm coming from a renter standpoint, please send this offer to your client. You have to represent your client in every way possible. You need to submit to them every offer that comes their way. And if a realtor is open to doing so, they know their clients. Listen, man, they will tell the client, listen, this is not an offer to buy. It's an offer to rent. We're about to rent a house here in Flower Mound.
Yeah.
Same way. So I took that same jack move to try to rent this $5 million house in Flower Mound. Only reason why we didn't buy it is because we found out there was a massive flooding in the kitchen in the great room.
Yeah.
And the former owner was a crypto millionaire who trashed the property. So we didn't get it. Good deal. All systems goes for Frisco. Cool. Speaking of people who got fat on cryptocurrency, let's talk about obesity.
So as we were talking about it earlier in the show, we've heard of the Arnold, we've heard of the Mr. Olympia and all these NPC bodybuilding shows that happen around the nation, even the world now. It's reached literally the other side of the world that people are flying in from other countries just to be part of these shows. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is the one who started it all, man. Phil Heath, you know, the Jay Cutlers, the Ronnie Coleman's. And to this day, we have, the C-Bums and everyone else who's part of this world who's trying to lead from the front lines forward when it comes down to physical health. But now we have a different branch of these kind of shows that are being put on, and they're called FatCon. So, Jordan, if you can pull up that video on FatCon, that'd be great, man.
FatCon?
I'm going to FatCon in Seattle, Washington, January 5th through 7th, and I want to see you there. FatCon is a three-day fat liberation celebration, y'all. We will be celebrating fat liberation, body acceptance, and the power of being in fat community. With over 60 hours of programming spanning from policy, legislation, healthcare, community, and visual
healthcare.
Arts,
plus a ton healthcare.
More, this is sure to be something you don't want to miss.
Healthcare. No, they don't have care. By the way, I say this too. It could be skinny con, because just because you're skinny doesn't mean you're healthy either.
What's your thoughts on this concept of empowering?
Well, the
community.
From an objective standpoint, good for her for marketing herself. Good for her for putting her brand out there. Good for her for not caring about what other people think. Good for her to wanting to build a community. Question people got asked is this the community that's allowed? Now, every time you join a community, one of the things that I go through my checklist in my community is this helping me live the life that I want?
Yeah.
Is this allowing me to live my best, my faith, my family, my fitness, my finances, my fun? Sometimes there's too much fun. Gluttony, there's too much, that's a sin.
Yeah.
It's a deadly sin. gluttony, having too much of anything, it can just, it's more than just food. It's gluttonous with your finances, gluttonous with your relationship, gluttonous with your boyfriends and girlfriends, gluttonous with clothes, gluttonous, yeah. Right? And there's so many areas of gluttony outside of just food. And yeah. Obviously food is an easy one to get at.
Yeah.
And I realized every time remember I just went through that fast?
Yeah.
I realized that through my fast, how gluttonous I got to chocolate chips ahoy and meat.
Yeah.
Like I can't eat a meal without meat. Who said? Who's in charge of your body?
Well,
God's in charge of my body. I had to remind myself, we remember about the book Faith Made Millionaire. I'm not in charge of my body. This is the temple of God.
Yeah.
God's in charge of this. I need to honor him. Mm-hmm. Boom. Man, I just got so addicted on food. And what did Jesus say? Man should not live on bread alone.
Yep.
And we got so addicted to bread. So that's my initial 60-second reaction
to that. And here's the thing. I'm not pushing back on not liking humans and bullying people, but although sometimes I do believe bullying should come back so it can push people in the right direction, right?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with loving people for people. But it's one thing to love people for people, and it's another thing to glorify an epidemic. Something that's leading people down a horrible direction. And I believe that this is probably one of the things out of many things that exist in the world right now, but this is a very selfish act. You're cutting your life expectancy by a massive amount. If you're like at a moderate obesity level, you're cutting your life expectancy maybe about 3 to 4 years.
Bro, didn't we just cover on a podcast a couple weeks ago that obesity today is killing more people today than hunger.
Than famine
and hunger.
Yeah.
For the first time ever in documented human history, that overabundance and gluttonous habits of too much food intake to cause somebody to be obese is killing more people today than famine and hunger.
And
crazy.
I wonder what other areas of life that ideology can be implemented into.
That's right.
Too much of what can affect XYZ parts
Laziness
of your life.
Laziness is a natural human condition.
Yeah.
Taking a short way out is a natural human condition. Using any substance, whether it be food, drugs, alcohol, to get out of dealing with something today is a lazy human condition.
Yeah.
I 100% agree.
100%. And if you're a parent, if you're a business owner, someone who's leading from the front lines and you're in this position, I really do believe you are an extremely selfish person, that you're not paying attention to the people that you're to the people that you're affecting in your business, to the people you're affecting within your family. Because again, if you are at a severe obesity level, based on the BMI measurements that exist, which compares your height to your weight, and it tells you estimates how much body fat you
body
have.
Body mass
in
index, right?
Right, correct, right. It's not 100% accurate, but it's one of the most accurate things that we have. If you're at a severe obesity level and your BMI is anywhere between 40 and 50, you're cutting your life expectancy by at least 10 years. And if you're at a moderate level of obesity, you will be cutting your life from at least 3 to 5 years. Jeez. And who knows where your kids need you in those 3 to 5 years, in those 10 to 11 or 12 years that you're cutting yourself off. And there's research that shows, Matt, that anywhere between 30 to 40% of obese individuals eventually develop a metabolic issue or complications, which then lead to heart disease, you know, other issues in your body that could potentially cut your life a lot short. And we've spoken about this, that a lot of your success in life, in business, and your purpose comes from the foundation of energy. It's the mental energy, the mental emotional energy, is the spiritual energy, and above all things, which is more of the tangible, is the physiological energy. If you have no physiological energy, you're not going to be able to get very far with your life. So for people who are in this position right now, and you can finally have that, you know, one-on-one conversation with yourself and take accountability and ownership of your shit, here are three things that I really do think you should go with that could potentially help you get more clarity on what steps you need to take in order for you to change your life from this point forward, right? The one thing, above all things, that within that one thing, there's three things, is becoming self-aware and then being able to reinforce that self-awareness by getting lab work done, getting a DEXA scan, and being able to consult a professional who can guide you along the right way. Getting lab work done is going to allow you to see what's going on in the inside, whether it's your cholesterol levels, glucose levels, or what levels within your body need attention, whether you're deficient, whether you're allergic, whatever the case may be, whether you want to take a DNA test, or whatever it is that you need in order for you to kind of get a jump start to understanding how your body works and what your body is in need of. A DEXA scan is more of the superficial aspect. It reads your body composition. You lay on a table, a scanner scans you, and it tells you how much body fat you have in your body, and you're able to get some form of a starting line on where you need to start, how much body fat you need to drop, and as you drop the weight, where your next milestone is. And being able to consult a professional, whether it's a nutritionist, a dietitian, even a fitness professional, to kind of give you a guideline, a roadmap per se, a flow chart to know what steps you need to take in order to go towards that right direction. And I would even go as far as saying getting a counselor. a psychologist. A lot of people, it's not just a physical issue, it's a mental health issue.
It's just not a thyroid issue.
It's a mental health thing. Yeah.
By the way, I empathize with people that do have a physical situation, condition. But it's not called, I wouldn't call it in FatCon then. I'd call it a medical retreat for those dealing with this issue that causes people to be obese. It's not to create, what she said, what was her pitch? To create a community, create awareness, healthcare.
Yeah.
If you're really right, if do people, good question. Do people suffering from obesity and chronically overweight, do they care about healthcare?
Do they pay more? Right?
Well, they would pay. I would say they would pay more.
They pay a lot more.
They pay a lot more because they don't care about their health.
You have a 300-pound, 400-pound person coming into your office and say, hey, I'm looking for a life insurance policy. What's the likelihood of them getting approved?
Like zero. And by the way, it's not us saying no. It's the insurance company saying, you have a probability of dying sooner and faster. You're a high risk.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of people. People find out about their diabetes. People find out about their life. And for the first time ever, working with a life insurance agent, they finally have to make some serious conditions, situation, because their condition will cause them to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
Not only healthcare-wise, but from an estate planning, wealth planning, and inheritance standpoint, because they are obese. You know, I would say look at this too as well. If you want to take a picture of all the millionaires and billionaires, pick out the ones that are obese.
Yeah.
Bezos, he's in shape.
Man's in shape.
Elon Musk.
He's getting in shape.
Patrick, but he's not obese.
He's not obese.
Patrick Bedavid.
He's in shape.
Former bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Your buddy sees him at the gym all the time.
Yeah.
All these guys have some form of physical routine to not only get their physical body ready to create the energy necessary to run a business, but also the mental. For me, bro, the last 3 weeks of me dealing with pneumonia, I've had such massive freaking mental pissed off activity because I can't get back in the gym. And then when I am back in the gym, freaking hack attack because I got to breathe deeply, and it causes the coughing fits.
Yeah.
But it causes me to slow down, and then even me, I'm just like edgy because I can't hit the gym because physical fitness is now part of life, just as many people have gluttonous habits as part of life. So I'm one thing, I know we're short on time, but trying to stay more disciplined with our time schedules here. So I've got this one last video here of Paul Harvey from 1965. Titled, If I Were the Devil. How would the devil take out you? How would the devil take out America? How would the devil take out what you love and care about? Well, this is what Paul Harvey said back in 1965. It's a three and a half minute audio, but we'll only play the half of it. But I want to know what you're thinking. This is what he said in 1965. It will haunt you as you hear this. Let's take a look at this, or let's listen to this.
If I were the devil, if I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States.
Woo!
I'd subvert the churches first.
Wow.
I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames.
Wow.
If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions.
Woo!
Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door.
Shut up, Revisor.
Within a decade,
right.
I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography, Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle.
That's halfway through it. This is halfway through it. This is 1965 when Paul Harvey said this. In the case of Vital and Abington School District versus Shemp, 1962 and 1963, this is when the Bible was taken out of schools. School-sponsored Bible reading, the Supreme Court established what is now the current prohibition on state-sponsored prayer in schools. It was removed in 1963. This was written in 1965. How much of what he just said in 1965 is truth and reality for the first 50% of this radio message in 1965 is actually resonating true right now?
It's almost like a prophecy.
Yeah.
You know, I scroll and I'm on TikTok looking for videos or reaction videos to have for the show or just for me, just kind of kill some time. There's a lot of videos that that they post of movies from the 60s, from the 70s, from the 80s of them, you know, and then captioning it. They've been trying to tell us. They've been trying to tell us since then. They've been trying to tell us from then. Mm-hmm. And then you watch these videos or these movies or these commercials that they have, and when you look at them, they're very, 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 very relatable to what's going on in nowadays. And it's almost scary because it feels like prophecies are starting to come true. Yeah. That's why you see a lot of Christians nowadays, or you know, lukewarm Christians. Maybe this idea of a second coming is happening, or maybe there's going to be a catastrophe very, very close. Yeah. You know what? Maybe I should start getting closer to God, because I feel like right now during this generation, especially this year, there's I don't want to call it a trend, but if you look at a lot of like social media influencers, there's two routes that they're taking. I feel like there's no more longer a gray area amongst a lot of these people. It's either people who are starting to talk about faith and push faith and some form of belief, like a strong belief system, or people who are completely going evil. Now it's no longer about, I don't feel like it's about race. I don't feel like it's about certain economies or politics. I really do believe right now we're in the middle of a war of good versus evil. Because you log into TikTok and you have 15, 16-year-olds being exposed to a woman on live TikTok doing witchcraft, reading tarot cards and casting spells. And now my threads and my algorithms is full of demonic things and speaking about the devil and the Satan temples and XYZ. And then on the other end, you have people pushing the idea of Christ or pushing the idea of some form of higher belief and connecting to a higher being because we're short on time now. And seeing those kind of videos or clips, which, by the way, man, thank you for sharing that. It reminds me of, have you read this book or heard the audio called Outwitting the Devil?
Of course. I love that book. It's a great book. It's a recommend reading for all of our guys. And who he attacks the most are the drifters.
Yeah.
People that drift from this decision, this company to company, this decision, this relation to this relationship. The enemy attacks the drifters.
So let me ask you a question based on what we just saw and what we're speaking about. If today was the day, and per se hypothetically, and I want to say hypothetically just to keep an open mind to everything, right? Hypothetically, today was the day, and today's the judgment day. Today's the day that the rapture happens, and you're face-to-face with God, and you guys are going over your entire life. Would you think that God would be pleased with you up to the point that you're at today and say, good job, my faithful servant. You have completed the task or tasks. Would you feel like you've done what you're supposed to do?
I feel that way because I every area of my life, it's seeking to honor God. Now, does that make me perfect? Do I have perfect habits? Do I have perfect, thoughts? Do I have perfect actions? No, but perfection is not the standard. Grace is.
Yeah.
And so everybody that is, do I see people that are obese? Do I see, on our show, do I see people that are training the wrong way? Do I judge them? I don't, but I got to call it out, though.
Yeah.
Just because I call it out doesn't mean I'm judging them.
Yeah.
I'm calling out. If I didn't care, I wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
I'm calling out because I do care, and I want people to see a different way, that this is not the right path to follow, and there's potentially a better way to life. Even the way I think I'm living a life, I still think there's a better way to live in my life.
Yeah.
Because perfection is not the standard. Improvement and the spirit of excellence is.
So leading with that, and believing and attaching yourself to the idea that we need to love like Christ loved us. We need to lead the way Christ led us. And let's get maybe a little bit vulnerable here, because I can speak on this for myself as well. Are there areas of your life that you feel can still are still being controlled by, quote unquote, right, your human ways? For example, like one of my prayers that I try to do every that I do every morning is, first of all, good morning, Holy Spirit. Help me, you know, by having less of me and more of you. Consume me so they can be less of me on a daily basis. Amen. So I can see people through Amen. Your lens of Yep. love and Amen. Grace
love
and mercy.
That. Love
right?
that.
But we still have our human moments.
Sure.
Where we get agitated. We still have our human moments where our pride gets in the way, our ego gets in the way, and all these quote unquote negative things just by our human nature. Yeah. Would you say that there's maybe one or two things in your personal life where you're like, you know what? Yes, I still need to work on this.
Of course.
I'm still not letting Christ penetrate.
That's why I can't. I'm looking at the screen across the way, another studio put you up.
Yeah.
Right? If you guys could see the other studio where I'm at, there's a big sign in TV, another podcast, another creator saying, you do you.
Yeah.
You do you. Yeah. I don't agree with you do you.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that. Why? Because you doing you is lazy. You doing you is vengeful. You doing you looks for the easy way out. You doing you is lazy. That's why we need a God.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we become our own God. You doing you is you becoming God. Now, by the way, I love to have this debate about you doing you. I think you doing you, but centered on the Christ side of things or the God side of things, again, I'm not trying to flip anybody to any religion, but you do need to have a faith. And that faith needs to be more than any human being, yourself or anybody here created and constantly living on this earth, continually living on this earth.
How does one approach a business, especially in the caliber that you're in right now, with that same mindset, that Christ-centered mindset of loving people, seeing people through Christ's lenses? Because,
bro,
personal
I'm,
life, business, that's completely different things.
I'm not. That's why I don't say I'm the CEO of my company. I'm the founder. Any branding you see, Matt, on, I'm the founder of Seven Figure Squad. Yeah. I'm the founder of the Money Smart Moon. I'm not the CEO.
I'm some.
Because God's the CEO.
Yeah.
I just happen to be the great founder and manager of it.
Yeah.
I'm a steward of the Seven Figure Squad. I'm a steward of the Money Smart Moon. I'm a steward of any relationship God sends my way. And that's been my prayer. And I need to wrap with this because we're running out of time. That my message to Christians during this week, so much craziness is happening in the world.
Yeah.
Just look around. And I asked on the Gotcha Book Tour, I asked people these three questions. Where do people get access to education? Colleges and trade schools, right? Where do people get asked for information? Or cell phones and Google. Where do people access wisdom? That's the better question. Because wisdom, no matter what you go through, you need wisdom. Something that gives you not only education, but the experience to back it. The know-how to back it. That's wisdom. Now, do I say, hey, 20-year-olds, give me some wisdom on business. Can you, a 20-year-old give me wisdom on business? I can, when I see a 20-year-old, I ask them how many years you've been in business. Because 20-year-olds today could be in business since 10 years old.
Yep.
11 years old, running a YouTube channel. Running marketing. I see a lot of wisdom from 20-year-olds. But when it comes to personal finances, I may pump the brakes. When it comes to relationships, I might pump the brakes. When it comes to have fruitful relationships throughout your life, I pump the brakes. But when it comes to marketing, I see a lot of wisdom from 20-year-olds. I see a lot more wisdom in 50, 60, 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, because they've been through life. They've been there, done that. So my message to Christians for Holy Week coming into Easter, and I'm wearing a shirt by John 3:16, the company called John 3:16, about Jim, about Joseph. Read about him in Genesis 37, where he counseled the Pharaoh of Egypt to interpret his dreams. But the reason why I don't do me or you do you is my case as I need a faith, a savior in my life. My life was a mess in my 20s and 30s. And I look back and I turned 30 years old. It's in my book, Faith Made a Millionaire. I said, God, I tried it my way for 20 years. Let me try it your way for at least 1 year, for 2 years. Well, it's been 20 years. And God has not let me down since. Now, have I gotten the results I look for in my pursuit of my careers, my endeavor? Just because I put in the faith-based ATM into the ATM machine doesn't mean I automatically got cash and returns because I punched a couple buttons. No. But if you look at the body of work for the last 20 years of my life, I think it's accelerated my life by another 40, 50 years in these last 20 years, because that has been my case for faith. Because my way was never going to be good enough. My life turned out to be a mess. I had street smarts, enough academic smarts to get my PhD, my public high school diploma, but I didn't have wisdom. And if you're going to be writing your life, your relationships, you're writing your business, your friendships, your partnerships, my friends on the Seven Figure Squad, you have to find your faith. And my faith has to be in Jesus Christ. That's been my savior. My religion, so to speak, is I don't have a religion. I have a relationship with Christ. I have a relationship with God. In my haircut in the back here, I put three lines: Father, the Son, Holy Spirit. Every time I get a haircut, to remind myself as I get my haircut every week, to remind those that follow me, I follow God the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Don't follow Matt Cipolla. Don't follow the Seven Figure Squad. Just follow the person that leads us. And hopefully some of you consider us a messenger for living your best life possible in terms of living a life that can encourage you to become a financial steward, to become a cash flow millionaire. Because these days, six figures ain't enough to fund and finance your dreams and goals. Yeah. Seven figures is. How does it feel making 30, 40, 50, 80,000 a month now? Huh? You're making a month what you used to make all year.
It's going to be a good year, man. It's going to be a good year, brother.
God. Amen. By the way, if you're a believer, I'd love to know in the comment section, but put believer in the comment section below. If you're a believer, happy Easter to you. He is risen. There's only one perfect man that walked this earth. Look what man did to him. They crucified him. He died. He visited Hades. He visited hell. Told the enemy he conquered death. Rose back to earth. Hung out for 30, 40 days. Until he ascended back to heaven. Can't wait for you guys. If you don't have a relationship with Jesus, if you don't have a relationship with Christ, if you don't have a relationship with God, I pray and hope that you find one. If you would like one, if you find one, reach out to us. And not only would I send you a book, gotcha, I'm going to send you for the first five people. I got this Bible called The New Believer's Bible by Greg Laurie. I'm going to send you that Bible too as well. I've got a case full of these Bibles at my house, the New Believer's Bible. In addition to that, for the first five people that put gotcha in the comment, not the live chat, but in the comment section, not only am I going to send you a book, gotcha, but for the first five people, I'm going to send you a free Bible called the New Believer's Bible. That being said, Milton, I appreciate this podcast,
appreciate
man.
Appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you guys next Wednesday. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Seven Fear Squad podcast, Seven Fear Squad YouTube channel. Make sure you hit like and put your biggest takeaway in the comment section below. You agree with us? You don't agree with us, please. We want to know. Thank you for your feedback in advance. That being said, God bless you guys. Happy Easter. I got good news, bro. He is risen.
He is risen, baby.
He is risen. That being said, continue to live smart. Continue to love smart. And be money smart today. See you next week. Bye-bye.